Welcome to this episode in the Sabbatical 101 Live Coaching Series, where I bring you behind the scenes of a real sabbatical strategy session with academics from across disciplines. These live coaching sessions give you insight into the questions and worries fellow academics have about their sabbaticals and the practical strategies and mindset shifts that go into planning a life-changing sabbatical. Whether you're dreaming of your first sabbatical or you're in the midst of planning one, I hope these candid conversations will help normalize concerns and challenges around sabbatical planning, provide you with some practical ways forward, and help you get inspired to make the most of your sabbatical. In this live coaching session, I'm talking to Elizabeth Canning. Elizabeth is an associate professor in the psychology department at Washington State University. This fall, she'll begin her first year-long sabbatical in Berlin, Germany, with her family. Elizabeth is fortunate that a lot of the logistics associated with moving abroad for sabbatical are being coordinated by the fellowship. Even so, she's been busy working on all the arrangements for sabbatical and hasn't had a lot of time to think about what she's actually going to do while she's away. What Elizabeth is most concerned about is how to create structure in her days in order to ensure she uses her sabbatical time well. Her goals are to rest and recover from burnout, finish a few writing projects, and spend some time reading and generating a list of possible new projects. If you're wondering how to create structure in your days or how to balance personal and professional goals during your sabbatical, then I think you're going to find this episode really helpful. Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you so much for being part of this live coaching session.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited to hear about your upcoming sabbatical and the challenges that you're encountering as you plan it. But before we get into that, do you mind just introducing yourself and telling our listeners where you are and what you study?
Absolutely. So my name is Elizabeth Canning, and I'm an associate professor in the psychology department at Washington State University. My research is focused on generally achievement motivation and how context or environments can support people or inhibit people in their motivation. So how do we create environments that inspire people, motivate people, allow them to learn and challenge themselves, and how those environments can help or hinder marginalized individuals?
That sounds really interesting. And it actually makes me think, I was just listening to the Ezra Klein show, and he was interviewing a guest about their new book, which I think is called something like The Disengaged Teen. And it was all about the ways that schools do and don't motivate kids. And especially right. In the dawn of AI, it's like even more challenging.
Absolutely. Getting people to really invest their whole selves in something and be creative and inspired, it's a challenging thing for people to do.
Yeah, for sure. So the other question I have before we talk about your sabbatical is about your people, because our sabbaticals are never just about us and our research, but most of us have, you know, we're embedded in some sort of an ecosystem and other people are affected by our sabbaticals. So would you just share a little bit about who your people are for your sabbatical?
Yeah, absolutely. So this will be a family sabbatical. So I have my husband will be coming with us, and I have two children. Two boys, a three-year-old and a nine-year-old. So when we go, it will be fourth grade for one and then preschool for the other.
Awesome. And I know that you already have a sabbatical destination and some things lined up. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, so we are very excited because I received a fellowship at the Wissenschaftskolleg in Berlin. And so we will be moving to Berlin for a full year starting in August. And so we're going to pack everything up and the kids will be going to school there and school and preschool. And so we will all be going together.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, congratulations. That sounds really exciting for you guys. And I'm sure daunting in some ways too.
Yes. Yes, it has been a lot. So I applied for the fellowship, I think 2 full years ago. So it's been in the works for a long time. And when we found out, so we've known about it for a while, which has actually been very helpful because we've been able to plan accordingly. But as part of this fellowship, they have a team of people employed that their whole job is to help people get there and back and set everything up for them. And so it's been really, really helpful to have someone on you know, on the ground there and helping us apply to schools and helping us with insurance and visas and all of that. And so that has been really, really helpful.
That's great. So it sounds like all of the logistics in terms of just how do you bring your family to Germany for a year, that's amazing to have that support network in place to figure it out. So is all that stuff more or less squared away?
For the most part. I mean, I'm still involved heavily in it, but it has been very helpful to have someone who has gone through the process multiple times every year. They do this for people all over the world who are moving to Berlin as part of this fellowship. And so we have found a place for the kids in schools. That's pretty much squared away. We have, I think, finally figured out the health insurance situation for the year. And in Germany, you can, if you're a US citizen, you can arrive and stay for 90 days and apply for residency during those 90 days. So that is our current plan, is to arrive and then we will submit all the paperwork that they need for a year residency there.
As you think about your sabbatical coming up, what are the things that you're worried about, wondering, or challenges you're facing in the planning process?
Yeah, so I think for me, the biggest unknown is kind of what I'm going to spend my time on, which I, as most people do, I have a backlog of papers that I want to write and work through. And so I do have, you know, several papers that I want to finish and submit sort of the first semester. But after those have been sort of out the door and on to their next destination, I really want the year to focus on creating a pivot in my career. So finding what the next thing is for me. I received tenure last year. And so part of that process for me and the choices that I made in terms of the projects that I was involved in and the papers that I were writing was very programmatic. And that was, you know, intentional in terms of getting tenure and making progress in certain areas. But it was limiting in a sense of, now that I have tenure, my view of tenure is you're now sort of have this freedom to take risks and to try new things and to do things that are not sort of this very intentional path of programmatic research necessarily. And so for me, that seems very daunting in terms of, how do I even begin to do that? How do I choose the next thing?
Yeah.
And so for me, that is, it's something that I want to get out of the sabbatical in terms of just, I would really like to come home with, you know, a list of ideas really, and things to pursue after I get back. And I'm not really sure how to go about procuring that or getting in the mind space to be able to do that, because I at least have lost that along the way in terms of being really intentional about reading things outside of your immediate area. You know, we don't really do that anymore. And so, you know, having that freedom to invest time into exploring things that may not work out or may, you know, lead you down a rabbit hole that ends up not being some product at the end. So yeah, that's sort of my biggest challenge is how do I structure things such that there's a lot of freedom, but also reaching that goal at the end.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it sounds like there are a couple concrete tasks, like, okay, you know that you want to get X number of papers off your plate. So I guess I could imagine, as I'm thinking about your sabbatical, there might be these kinds of like some distinct seasons of work and also not work. So, you know, you guys will go to Germany and there will be an adjustment period, right, with the kids. In my experience, there's a lot of just like the moving in, getting acclimated, and then getting everyone settled into school and their routines and thinking about like, how am I going to spend my day, right? And those kinds of things. So that, you know, maybe as your first 3 weeks or a month, depending on when your arrival is timed with the start of school.
Right.
And then you might have a season that's like finishing up projects that you've been working on. And I love this idea of a sabbatical that lets you make that pivot, because you're right. In the lead up to tenure, so much of the work feels instrumental. It's like, what do I have to do in order to meet these expectations? And there's not a lot of time to really sit and reflect on what you're doing or why. Yeah. And I don't know about you, but when I'm reading during my normal life, it's like, okay, I need something in my lit review for this, or how do I?
Right. So, I need to find something that says this. So I need to find a paper that fits that particular sentence. Yes.
Yeah. And it's not that kind of pleasurable, like why most of us became academics, because we have some sort of innate curiosity and want to read deeply and think deeply. So I'm imagining then, you know, it could be the whole second half of your year or more, like maybe you spend the fall semester writing and then you have this really spacious second semester to do reading, and maybe you come up with a way of keeping track of the insights and ideas that are coming up. But it sounds like this goal of having a list of ideas, first of all, I think sometimes we limit ourselves to thinking that a product has to be a product, like it has to be a publication. So I love the fact that you're starting off with this, like, if I just have a list of ideas of what I might pursue next, that will count as like a good sabbatical and as something you want to come away from. Sabbatical. Yeah. So when you're in Berlin, do you have work-related obligations? Or is it kind of just a residency, or are there other activities that you'll be doing there?
Yes. So part of this institute, so it's an Institute for Advanced Study, if you're familiar with that concept, where they bring 40 academics from all over the world to live there in residence for the year. And part of that agreement is that you sort of live and work alongside people from all different disciplines. So there will be biologists at the institute and, you know, artists and writers and musicians. And I think there will be one other psychologist there while I'm there. So it's very interdisciplinary. And part of the agreement is that you eat lunch together every day with all the fellows. And this is to get you talking to people that you wouldn't normally talk to in your everyday academic life. And then I'm also required to attend a weekly colloquium where each fellow takes turns presenting on their research. So I will be learning about all different kinds of things that I wouldn't normally learn about in a, you know, psychology focused colloquium necessarily. So those are the two main commitments that I've agreed to as part of this fellowship.
That's such a great opportunity. And so it sounds like some of this thinking about what's next may in part be seeded by just this interdisciplinary environment that you're going to be in.
Yeah.
And it might help you think about different questions or lines of research or different fields of study, like collaborations you may want to pursue in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the sort of the whole essence of this type of institute is to broaden people's knowledge, but also allow people time to think about things that they wouldn't normally think about from different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that process inherently can inform your own particular or narrow focus in your research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other thing that I really like to ask folks about when it comes to planning their sabbatical is, what kinds of personal goals or aspirations do you have? Some of us come into sabbatical feeling very burned out or wanting to be more present with our families and things like this. So I think we've talked a little bit about the work-related goals, but what are you personally hoping to get out of it?
Yeah, I think we definitely have goals as a family to spend some time traveling. So this will allow us to see a lot of Europe that we wouldn't normally be able to see across this long of a period of time. Mm-hmm. So we definitely want to travel. We will mostly have to do that on the weekends or on holidays, given the school schedules and the kids and everything. So that is definitely one of our goals. I think another personal goal for myself is to allow time for exercise and movement. So I'd really like to incorporate that into my daily routine in terms of walking or biking. We do plan to get some bikes for the family there as one of the ways that we can get around Berlin. Mm-hmm. And so that will be hopefully a part of our routine. I think a third goal, personal goal, you mentioned burnout. I think that ties into my work goals in some ways, in that I really would just like to become more engaged, I think, in my own research. I guess not sure how to phrase it, but it is, I think I am experiencing some of the signs of burnout in terms of you know, lost interest in projects that you've been working on and really feeling, you know, does this all matter? What's the point of this? You know, those sort of existential questions, especially now and in this year with higher education being under attack in various ways. And so finding meaning and value in what you're doing and really just being excited about it again. I can remember in graduate school being so excited to get a new data set, and it's like Christmas morning and you want to open it up and see what's there and, you know, what's inside and what do the data show. And I have lost that feeling over the years. And so I'd really like to get back to that space.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I also think that there must be something about mid-career, and particularly when you have caregiving responsibilities. Like, I imagine that for many of us, things shift, like priorities shift, and we don't have enough time in the run-up to tenure to really think about that or process that. And so I can imagine you coming away from your sabbatical saying, I'm excited again, but I'm excited in a different way, or it's like a slightly different thing is driving me, and you don't know what that is right now because you haven't had time to think about it. But I can say from personal experience that just having that time to rest and disconnect is so helpful for reinvigorating, or just, yeah, when I got tenure, I thought I was ready to quit my job, which makes no sense, but yeah. I felt like, what am I doing? Is academic research even contributing to anything?
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And now that I had this vague sense like, oh, this might be burnout. And then I was listening to your podcast this fall, and I was like, oh, I think that I really was legitimately burned out. Like, I am exhibiting the symptoms.
Yeah, I think we mistake burnout for a lack of energy. And I definitely don't feel that. Like, I'm definitely active and doing things. But I think the burnout is more psychological in the way that we engage with the work, not necessarily the energy that we might have.
Yeah.
But yes, people warned me about the post-tenure slump, and multiple people mentioned that as a thing. And I think I was very naive in a sense of, well, that would never happen to me. And well, that only happens to people who are in, you know, these other sort of situations, and I'm above all of that. And I think the very next semester I experienced it. So it's definitely a real issue, I think, in this mid-career stage.
Yeah, for sure. And thankfully, we have sabbaticals that let us, I think, can be just a great time to really think about, what have I been doing? Like, where has my energy been going? Do I still want to commit energy to those projects? Do I want to pivot, like you're thinking about? Yeah. Because oftentimes, again, I'll speak for myself, but I took on projects because I was pre-tenure, or I got interested in something, I took it on. And then I look back 2 years later, like, why am I still doing this thing? It's actually not really motivating to me anymore.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of empowerment that comes with tenure and being able to say, I can take some things off of my plate if it's no longer serving the direction that I'm going in. You know, and obviously being mindful about who else is affected by you stepping away from something. But I think it can be kind of freeing to even just like clear the decks a little bit and say, I'm going to be a little more intentional, even if you come out of your sabbatical not really knowing the direction you're going in, but being more intentional about what you say yes to. And then when you're more intentional about what you say yes to, it also means you're more intentional about what you say no to, which I think feels good, right? It feels, I mean, I don't want it to sound selfish, but I know it can feel really good to say no to something, because you're like, okay, I thought about it and I decided it wasn't for me. And by saying no to this, it means I can spend my time on something else that I'm really, really care about.
Yeah.
So as you think about your year on sabbatical, have you imagined at all what your days might look like?
That I'm not sure, to be honest. I think so much of the planning has been in the logistical side of things, right? I mean, the amount of logistics involved in moving a family of four to another country is so vast that the majority of my planning has been spent on those things. And so it has really taken a backseat of, what am I actually going to do every day? And I think right now I'm at, well, I'll figure it out when I get there.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. I think I would imagine there's the normal morning rush of getting the kids to school and all of that. I think because of the way this fellowship is structured, and there's sort of a morning period of work time, individual work time, and then you go and socialize at lunch and talk and engage in that aspect of it. And then maybe the, sort of the afternoon period. And so I think I will need to be strategic in the types of tasks that I do morning versus afternoon, given the amount of social batteries that I tend to have bring to the table in terms of I imagine I will be slightly drained after having to engage with other people for a period of time.
Yeah. So you're with the other fellows in the morning and for lunch. And then did you say that the afternoon is there's a work period too, or is the afternoon more open and free?
I think it's up to me. I think the mornings will be spent independent time. So I imagine that would be writing time for me, work, you know, emails, all of that in the morning. And then lunch midday with the other fellows. And then the afternoon period, I imagine, would be more conducive to reading and reflecting and spending less sort of pressured time doing those activities.
Yeah. And I wonder too about taking some afternoons off to, you know, hang out with your husband or do whatever kind of physical activity, exercise, or movement you enjoy. So that could be a good time for those sorts of activities too.
Yeah, we plan to join a neighborhood gym while we're out there. We're also in a part of Berlin that's near the Grunewald Forest, which has lots of biking trails and walking trails, and is supposed to be a very beautiful part of the outskirts of Berlin. And so I imagine we can spend time exploring that area as well in the afternoons.
Yeah. Because often many of my clients envision like a reduced work schedule over the course of a week. So I'm wondering if that's something you've thought about. I think sometimes having that time to rest allows those ideas to percolate a little bit more when we're not just going from like one thing to the next all the time.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine that being very helpful. I think the challenge for me will be in taking off time to be intentional about what I do during that time. Because if I just shift to, you know, planning a trip for the family or doing more logistical things, or I could fill that time doing activities that wouldn't allow me to reflect or to be allowing ideas to percolate and things like that. And so for me, that might be the challenge, is what do I fill that time with that would be conducive to that rest and that reflection?
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine creating a weekly schedule for yourself where you're, okay, in the mornings, I'm doing this writing. And then let's say Tuesday and Thursday afternoon, I have a block of like, I'm taking the afternoon off to just do whatever, even if it's planning travel. And then maybe Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you're like, okay, I'm going to take 2 hours on those days to really like read and reflect. How do you operate in terms of routines and schedules? Does that seem like something that would be helpful for you to designate times and days to do certain activities?
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. That's typically how I work in my normal day-to-day. I am very calendar-based, so if it's not on the calendar, I don't do it. And that means writing as well. So I typically in my, during a normal academic year, I would block off time for writing on specific papers during specific days and hours. And so I've already kind of operated in that way. I do work very well with having planned out ahead of time what the tasks are for each day.
Yeah. So I could imagine doing something like that during sabbatical, where maybe Friday afternoons, you set aside some time for planning out the next week and you chunk out your calendar like this. And then you know kind of where you are in the papers that you're getting off your plate. And then, you know, with some of my clients, we've come up with this idea that they have like post-it notes for the different chunks of their day, like the different things that they want to be doing, like exercise, or some people are wanting to like learn how to cook and try out different vegan meals and, you know, whatever it is that you like doing. And then they put up post-its in their home office. And so it kind of creates this menu of options. So as you look at your calendar, you're like, okay, I'm going to plug in my workout here and my writing here and my cooking here.
Yeah, I really like that as like a menu, right? I think, yeah, that's a way to remind yourself of the goals that you have for yourself, personal and professional. And then also, yeah, the sort of plug and play of what's on the menu for this week or what's on the menu for today.
Yeah. And it's kind of, so it's open. You don't have to be totally rigid because I also don't love the idea of sabbatical. It should feel different. It should feel a little more spacious, I think. So we don't want it to be like, I've committed to writing 35 hours a week. And if I don't do that, I'm going to punish myself or feel really bad. You know, maybe it's a beautiful day and you just want to go for a walk or a bike ride in the forest. Yeah. I think we should allow ourselves to do this during sabbatical. Yeah. But the nice thing about having that menu is you've already made that first decision of like, what are the possible ways I want to spend my time? So then you don't have to sit there thinking, making that decision. You just choose from your kind of possibilities that you've come up with. So it's flexible, but you're not reinventing the wheel every week either.
I like that a lot. I think especially with being faced with a lot of unstructured time, it can feel very much like the planning of the time is a waste. And, you know, you spend the whole day, what am I going to do today? What am I going to do today? Yeah. And then the day's gone and it feels like a waste or it feels unproductive. And so I do like that idea of a menu and having that work ahead of time done to where these are the things that you've already agreed are worthwhile. And these are things that you've already agreed that would be value added to your day or your life. I do like that idea.
Yeah. It's kind of the, I don't know, when your kids are little and they nap and you like, don't know how long they're going to nap for, there's like this pressure, like I should really use this in the best way possible.
Yes.
And then I always, whenever I try to use it in a good way, the kid wakes up earlier than I thought that they would. And then I'm really frustrated and disappointed. And then I feel like I didn't do a good job using that time.
Yes, it's exactly like that, I think. Yes.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, you may find as you're on sabbatical, it's hard to imagine it when you're in the grind, but you may like that open space, the white space on your calendar. And you may eventually say like, okay, I feel comfortable leaving a couple hours of white space and just like seeing what comes up that day and what I feel like doing and not feeling like there always needs to be some productive element to it. I guess the other thing that I'm thinking about, which I don't know if there's an answer for right now, but this idea of coming away from sabbatical with a list of potential new research directions and ideas, I'm wondering if you'd want to develop for yourself sort of a systematic way of keeping track of the ideas that come up, like whether that's, or even just like tracking the things that you read, if that's in like an Excel sheet or something, maybe thinking about how you are best organized so that you feel like after sabbatical, because there's going to be this transition period where you all move back and then maybe, you know, have some time readjusting. So thinking ahead to like, how am I going to re-engage with those ideas that came up during sabbatical and how to keep those in kind of a centralized place or have some sort of an audit trail of the things that you did over sabbatical so you can go back to them and re-engage with them easily.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I haven't really thought about how to track or whether to track, but I can see the value in, especially if a lot of the time is spent reading and thinking, there is the possibility that you come away with, well, what did I actually do? Was that useful? Did anything sort of materialize out of that? But having maybe a journal or maybe in combination with a spreadsheet of here are the papers that I read and the questions I had that came out of that reading or some ideas that were sparked from that in a document or some sort of tracking system. I do like that idea.
Yeah. And I kind of love the idea you mentioned about having a journal too, or maybe something off of a screen. To me, reading on a screen feels very instrumental. And there's something when I do print out an article and sit with it, I can sit in a different place. I can sit on the couch and have a cup of coffee. And so, yeah, I wonder about having something that's off screen that helps you maybe be a little bit more creative or that allows your mind to wander a little bit more when you're reflecting on what you read.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think the handwritten notes and the handwritten ideas or the questions that you think about as you're reading. Often, I think when we're writing on a computer, it feels very permanent, right? Like if I write it down, then it has to be a good idea or it has to be something that I'm going to follow up on. And not every, you know, our minds don't work like that. We have fleeting thoughts all the time. And so having it handwritten can allow you to kind of go back and curate or
pick the ones that you want to follow up on or in that sense. So yeah, I do really like that idea. I have had in the past sort of running Word document that was ideas that I had or project ideas that some of them were pursued and some of them weren't, but it wasn't very systematic or tied to reading or anything like that. And so I do like the idea of elevating that in a way of connecting it to things that I have done. Sort of breadcrumbs or a paper trail of sort of the time that I spent thinking and reading. I do that.
And then it also helps you in a sort of logistical way. I'm sure at the end you have to submit a report about what you did. And so then it'll also help you put that down in writing for your institution.
Yeah, that would be very helpful, I think. Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth, this was a great conversation and I'm so excited about your sabbatical. And I hope that the rest of the logistics get planned as quickly and painlessly as possible and that you guys have an amazing year in Berlin.
Thank you so much. This has been really helpful and it's getting me more excited about the upcoming travel.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.